Welcome to And For Off the Block, your weekly podcast for college men's volleyball. And now here's your host, Off the Block editor, Vinny Lips.
Welcome in, everyone. We're so glad that you're joining us. Has your sleep schedule gotten back on track yet? I'm not talking about, you know, the time change. I'm talking about having to stay up till 2 a.m., 3 a.m. to watch the Hawaii matches, the Outrigger Invitational. That tournament lived up to all the hype. We're glad that we did a 90-minute pregame show on him. We really appreciate everyone who checked that out last week. Lots of fun stuff, lots of good matches. Really, really, though, would love Manet volleyball in Hawaii. Would love it. But that is for a different topic. So we're going to do something a little different this week as we sit here, because not only are we getting to that point in the season when spring break's on, it's coming, it's almost over for some schools. We're a month left away from the regular season, and I'm joined by Jonathan Bates here. Jonathan, month left in the regular season. Can you believe it?
Well, you can also look at the opposite standpoint that Big West play really hasn't started in earnest. So I'm really looking forward to this last month. It's going to, I mean, the story or the season always plays out, but like, I know we clearly think that Hawaii is the class of the Big West, and I don't think that's really up for debate. But am I really convinced that Long Beach State is that much better than Irvine? No, I don't know.
All right, we are getting into right away, Jonathan. I like it. You're coming out as a flame torch. I mean, first you started that off saying you can look at it. I thought you were going to talk about time, whether or not you view time as linear or cyclical. But no, you go right there talking about Hawaii, Long Beach State. I love it. I love it. Well, what we're going to do, though, Jonathan, I think the big news that came out this week, also the matches were huge, but the huge news that came out Monday was the RPI ranking. And the reason why I love this and these rankings to come out is because if you want to view bracketology, selection process, you have to view it kind of like as a puzzle. And you have to say, okay, there's different components. You know this piece. You know that piece. You can kind of guess what this piece is going to be. RPI rankings is really the last data piece that comes out that you don't know until March, because the first one is not released till around March. So this one came on out, and some interesting numbers that came out of it. So what we're going to do here today, we're going to talk a little bit about the RPI, talk about the bracketology, because Off the Block is going to be dropping its first bracketology projection, and then also break down some of the paths that teams may have to get into the NCAA tournament. And then, Jonathan, you can hit me up with some questions as well. Because bracketology, I love this. You know, I absolutely love sitting down looking at the numbers because it's so data-driven. When you have the committee that comes on in, they're not talking, okay, this outside attacker is, you know, really good at the BIC, so, you know, matchup-wise, this team is better. No, it's a straight-up data analysis of the teams. And once again, you have good players. You're going to rack up more wins. Your numbers are going to look better. So, Jonathan, would it be helpful before we go into the RPI if I gave everyone a quick overview of the bracketology that comes into play and the criteria that people have to look at, the selection committee?
Also, if you do that, please tell us what's not.
We are ready to go. All right. So let's, for everyone just tuning in and who's maybe never seen NCAA Division I, Division II men's volleyball, you're maybe wondering, man, 64 teams. This is awesome. No. It's not that way. 7 teams get in. Five automatic qualifiers. And then you have 2 at-larges. Now, just because you're in a conference does not mean that you get an AQ. NEC. Congratulations, whoever that champion's going to be. I think it's going to be Damon. You don't have an AQ this year. SIAC, hey, Edward Waters, Central State, Duke it on out for that title. You're not going to the NCAA tournament this year. IVA, Jonathan, you know, we love our IVAs, our independents, Lincoln Memorial, great story. Not going to get it if you win the IVA championship. So only 5 AQs. It is the Big West, MPSF, Conference Carolinas, MIVA, and EIVA. those conferences have all decided whoever wins their conference tournament, they get the automatic bid. No matter how crummy your regular season was, if you string together three good wins in the conference tournament, you're in. Then there's two others that the selection committee gets to decide. Now, when it comes down to selecting those two at-large teams and then determining the overall seeding for the NCAA tournament, and we can talk about how, yes, okay, only the top two are technically seeded, but reality is it's all in one place. Teams are seeded 1 through 7, 6 and 7 play in the first round of the opening round. Then you have the next round of the opening round where you have number three seed playing the winner of that game, the 6-7, you have the 4-5 matchup, then you go into the semifinals. Your number one, number two seed get by the semifinals. So the criteria that's used for determining the seeding and that's used for determining the at-large is all the same. And here are the criteria that the selection committee has to look at. And this is by bylaws NCAA. This is not the NCAA selection committee coming in and they can willy-nilly change. Yeah, you know what, we're going to look at this stuff this year. No, it's already said in advance what they're going to be looking at. So RPI ranking, strength of schedule, win-loss, head-to-head competition, record versus non-conference opponent, home and away results, so home record, road record, results against common opponents. Once again, what is your record against teams who you played against, each team played against? Record against teams under consideration or who have qualified. So those are your teams that, who were your AQs, and then who are the teams that you're considering for a possible at-large. And then the final one, eligibility and availability of student athletes for NCAA championship. This is, in all honesty, this is a category down the bump. That's a seldom used moot category. I have never seen this go in effect. Theoretically, it could go on in if, let's say, you know, an entire team opts not to participate and they say we're not going to play in the postseason. But it's not, this is not necessarily looking at, okay, this player has a twisted ankle, so, you know, should we seed them three? It could be, but I've never seen that happen before. Now, couple of things when we go over this. Jonathan, what's one thing that you did not hear me say was in the criteria?
The location of matches.
That's correct. Well, location matches, I guess, road home.
Right, but head-to-head, it doesn't matter. That's not under consideration.
That's correct. So if you beat a team, doesn't matter if you beat them at home, beat them on the road. It's that head-to-head. That's what matters. Where did you beat them? So, for instance, Hawaii, UCLA, let's take this for an example, only meeting this year. Hey, Hawaii was on the road. They pushed them. Yeah, but you lost. In the head-to-head competition category, you're 0-1 in that area. Doesn't matter. Now, you could say, okay, well, you know, now there's other benefits to the playing match like that. Your strength of schedule is going to be boosted up. Opportunity to get a away win. Jonathan, another one that you didn't hear me say was coaches poll. The coaches poll. And we've done a pretty good job of educating folks of this. And if you're listening to the podcast, you're a loyal follower, you know that I've pounded this drum. I have to pound it again. Because every year it comes up, we got new people. We're growing the game. Some new people are coming in, which is awesome. The coaches poll does not matter. It means nothing in the selection committee criteria. It is a moot point. No one is considering that. No one is looking at that. When they're deciding the teams, they're not saying, hey, let me go to the ABCA website really quick and see where Charlie Wade voted his team. Doesn't matter. Now, not saying the coaches poll is irrelevant. It's great for hype, great for conversation. Imagine having a week-long discussion about who should be number one. It's something. Now, same thing with the media poll. Our media poll, Jonathan, our beloved media poll that we do, I'm very proud of the fact that of all the college men's volleyball, women's, men's, each, Division I, Division II, men's volleyball is the only one that has a media poll. That doesn't mean anything, though. The committee's not looking at it. So for people who ever get upset, why is Vinny getting a vote? Doesn't matter in the end of the day in terms of the committee. What matters is the data in these categories. And now the other confusing thing also, Jonathan, that I want to hit on as well, is strength of schedule. And let's take a great example here. So strength of schedule, when we are looking at it, that is straight up what is the team's winning percentage. So that is all that you're looking at. So let me ask you this question. So let's take this a step. Look at this, Jonathan. You got matches against one team's playing USC, one team's playing, let's say, Long Island. Just go pick two random teams here. Common sense, you know, or volleyball fandom would say, man, you're playing USC. That's going to be good for your strength of schedule, right?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, actually, no, though. Because USC, it's not bad, but USC has a losing record this year. So playing USC actually could drop your strength of schedule as opposed to a team that plays Long Island. Long Island's currently sitting at 9-8, USC 8-9. Long Island has a better record. So actually, better for you to play Long Island. So that's why we see teams, once again, who are trying to do the strength of schedule math. This is where the Conference Carolinas can come into play. You know, it's why back in the day, lots of teams would want to schedule Barton early in the year because Barton was a 25-win program once they got into conference play. So if you could, you know, beat Barton early on, good competitive match, but you took care of business against them, hey, you get a win, that's going to help out your RPI. It's the same thing with some of these schools, you know, such as, you know, Lincoln Memorial, another great example. This is a great team that you want to play for RPI purposes because Lincoln Memorial is always going to have about 20 wins. And so strength of schedule purposes. So forgive me there. So once again, when we're talking about strength of schedule, it is not, this team has 5 top 10 wins. Nope, because remember, coach's poll does not mean anything. It does not matter. It just comes down to what is the overall winning percentage of your opponent. That's all.
Well, I would say the bounce back of that is playing a team like SC might actually increase your RPI, even if it doesn't increase your strength of schedule because of who they play. Because RPI factors in who they play.
Absolutely, Jonathan. And this is a great point. So you hit on the great thing. So RPI, Jonathan, let's talk about this really quick. Because I think for women's volleyball fans, you're plugged into the RPI. The women's volleyball RPI is a lot more complex than the men's volleyball RPI. Women's volleyball RPI, you can get bonuses for beating a top 10 team in the RPI, or you can get penalized for, you know, you can get penalty points if you lose to a team, let's say, outside of the top 100. Yeah, I don't know the total machinations, but there's certain bonuses and everything that you have in there. For men's, it is a straight-up simple formula that's used. So you have your winning percentage record. That's 50%. Then you have your strength of schedule. That's 25%. And then the opponents of your opponent's strength of schedule. So, for instance, I'm going to use Concordia as a great example here right now. If you beat Concordia, doesn't really help your strength of schedule. If you play Concordia, it doesn't really help your strength of schedule. But Concordia this year has the number one strength of schedule in the nation. So you're actually, in the RPI, you can benefit a little bit because opponents against opponent, that rises up a little bit. So once again, not horrible if you're playing a team that has a losing record. It may hurt you in strength of schedule, but opponents against opponents, depending on who they're playing, that can help. And then also getting a W is important. As we said earlier on the show, and I'll stand by it, winning matters. So, Jonathan, those are the criteria.
One other thing I want to bring up is, and we're getting a little ahead of ourselves on this one, but the committee does not, in terms of seeding, and I would say seeding is part of bracketology because the committee does not take into consider whether you are a league champion or not.
Yep, doesn't take that into account. And in all honesty, doesn't take into account your conferences. That's the other thing as well. So I remember 2021, some people are like, oh, why are – it's an all Big West semifinal. Why would you set it up that way? Well, because that's what the criteria dictated.
And, do you want a fun fact about last year's RPI, first RPI?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I think I know where it is. Can I guess? Because I had to – I pulled up these old stories. Go ahead, maybe ruin your fun fact. Go.
Who was the number one team in RPI in the first release last year?
USC.
Correct.
Yeah,
so
USC.
I just want to make sure that everybody who's a fan, you don't see your team number one or even the top five, don't panic. It's way too early.
It's way too early, but the other thing is also, and I think this is the big point, is RPI is not the be-all, end-all. I remember, 10 years ago, really felt that way in women's volleyball, where it was like, is this committee just pulling up the RPI and saying, okay, top 40, here you go, you get the at-large. It's a component. So, and we saw that, last year, where I believe it was Penn State had a slightly higher RPI than Long Beach State, or forgive me, I may be slightly off on that, but, it was super close. So, let's go over the RPI really quick for those who haven't been able to check out the story. So number one we'll do, I'm kind of just give everyone the top 10 here. So UCLA number one, number two is Penn State, and the point differential here between UCLA and Penn State, it is about 1/100th of a point, which that may feel like, oh, that's really small. No, that's actually pretty big in RPI. So UCLA has a nice, comfortable lead in number one, which would make sense. They've had a very good strength of schedule. Number two, most wins in the nation at 19. They're doing fine. They've kind of done everything they need to do to have a strong RPI. Penn State, number two. Next coming in is Grand Canyon. Once again, Grand Canyon continuing to rack up the wins here. Long Beach State, number four. Hawaii, number five. UC Irvine, number six. Number seven is BYU. Eight, Loyola. Nine is Pepperdine. 10, Ball State. So when I saw this, Jonathan, I think the biggest thing that surprised me was Ball State still the top 10. I mean, that was like my biggest shock of, all right, I did not think that they would be that high, but then you kind of think about the numbers, okay, makes sense. They play a really, good, tough non-conference schedule. So kind of makes sense there. So, Jonathan, let's start. So we've kind of gone over the bracketology, strength of schedule, and do we want to start kind of delving into where we left off with, well, let me ask you this, Jonathan. Do we want to talk about how the top three teams right now and how what we perceive? Would we be in agreement looking at everything? We perceive that Penn State, UCLA, Hawaii are the top three teams in the nation. They're likely going to be duking it out for the top two seeds in the NCAA tournament.
Yes, but can I ask you one more question?
Yeah,
go
ahead. And actually, why don't you fire away with your questions?
Okay.
I think that may be a better way.
I remember before 2021, because 2021 was just a very unique season, that you put the magic number, I believe, at eight losses, that no team would, with eight losses or more than eight losses would really be under serious consideration for an at-large. Is that still something that you believe in this year?
That's a good question. This year, yes. I think in other years, no. Because it's so interesting because that bubble changes, and I think typically eight is the number you kind of want to look at. This year, I think that number may actually be a little lower. Because you kind of start thinking about, well, let's kind of even talk about this. Let's talk about the teams who are under consideration right now, the teams that we have. So looking at all the data, running through everything, if your name is not one of these schools, and you're a fan of a team that I'm not going to talk about, your only chance of making the NCAA tournament is if you win your conference tournament. So UCLA, Penn State, Grand Canyon, Long Beach, Hawaii, UC Irvine, and BYU, and Loyola. That's it. So interestingly enough, Jonathan, the number kind of is at 8 this year right now, because I'm looking at Pepperdine. They're number 9 in the RPI. Kind of look at their data points. They have no chance of getting an at-large bid. Like, just none. So you kind of look at it from there. And I think BYU, they have a very, very narrow path to get an at-large. They need a lot of things to go right, but there still is a path there for them. And we can kind of play out that schedule and everything and how it could happen. So you're basically looking at 8 teams right now that are in contention for 2 at-large bids. And keep in mind, that number, we're basing that off of the projections that UCLA, Penn State, and Hawaii, or Long Beach State for that matter, take care of business and conference tournament and win. If you get a situation where, let's say, Penn State loses, UCLA loses to someone not Grand Canyon, that gap shrinks even more now, and there's fewer teams to consider because now you got to put in one of these juggernauts up at the top end for an at-large slot.
So you're saying that bubble teams are not fans of the Charleston Golden Eagles right now?
No, absolutely not. You are in no way a fan of Charleston. Anything in the EVA, you don't like. Period, end of discussion. And same way, if you are a bubble team, let's say in the MPSF, is there's a way that you could get in the NCAA. There's a path possibly, let's say for BYU, for instance, that they could get an at-large 3 teams in the MPSF to get in. It's very slim. You're a fan of Santa Barbara. You're a fan of CSUN. You're a fan of UC San Diego in the regular season. But then you want them to lose and lose early in the conference tournament. So, yeah. And once again, this is a whole separate discussion we can do about conference tournaments and how personal opinion, we've gone crazy with them on the amount of emphasis that we put in them, where the goal of the NCAA tournament is to select the best teams throughout the season. So, yeah, so that's kind of where we are. So, Jonathan, what do you want from me? Where do we want to go here? Do we want to start kind of
circle back
about
to the top 3 teams? Yeah, let's go.
All right, let's do that. Okay. So this is what we're looking at right now, going through, and I did some, and I crunched all these numbers. It's available on the Off the Block website if you want to check it on out. So let's kind of talk about Penn State UCLA, Jonathan, because I think that this is going to be kind of an interesting one, because you would think, and this is where, once again, keep in mind when we talk about this, not one category, selection committee criteria category, we went over all 9 of them. There's not one that has an increased emphasis. We can tell you historically what has mattered the most. So historically, usually it's your RPI record, your strength of schedule, and your record, your head-to-head record against teams that are consideration. But that may not be the case every year. You don't know until the committee gets in. Case in point, let's talk about 2018. And Hawaii, UC Irvine, where that committee ultimately said we're not head-to-head isn't as important. Hawaii had 1, 2, or 3 against UC Irvine, but Hawaii had a more impressive road resume, so we're going to give the nod to UC Irvine because of their road resume. In essence, that was argued. Whether you agree with it or not, that's a whole separate conversation that we can have. Same thing in 2014 when Lewis had a better strength of schedule because really the explanation of strength of schedule wasn't well known, I think, at the time. And also the MPSS, you know, only had like 3 non-conference matches. Lewis ended up getting the at-large bid over Pepperdine. So we have a couple. So historically, you know, some things can look a little different. You never know sometimes, but typically RPI, strength of schedule, and also record against teams under consideration. Another auxiliary factor that isn't in here as well, but it plays to your RPI, is your conference RPI. And if we look at that as well, MPSF is crushing this year, like just dominating conference RPI, which is good because, once again, if you're the MPSF, that means that more teams in your conference are going to win, so your RPIs are going to be higher. Okay, let's now talk about Penn State, UCLA. So edge here across, so you think Penn State, UCLA, man, Penn State's number one in one of the polls. You know, they beat Hawaii. They should be ahead of UCLA. Fair argument to make in debate, but if you look at the data, look at the numbers, RPI ranking, UCLA has the edge. You look at strength of schedule, UCLA number two, Penn State number four. Edge goes there to UCLA.
You have to think with UCLA's schedule coming up, especially with the matches against Grand Canyon down the road, that their lead in that category is just going to increase.
Yep, it's going to increase, and Penn State's is going to go down here as you play. Now, the good thing for Penn State, you still have two matches against Charleston coming up. And it's not looking as bleak, I would say, for Penn State, because George Mason's starting to pick up some wins, various things along those lines. So, and now, once again, I will say also keep in mind with these, we talked about, you know, shades of gray here. You know, so for instance, you know, if strength of schedule's two, you know, or four, yeah, UCLA has the edge, but it's not a juggernaut slam dunk. So that's something that may also keep in mind. Win-loss, right now UCLA has the edge in that, both with two losses, though. So UCLA 19-17 for Penn State. Head-to-head, you may say, UCLA, they won a neutral site, so they have the advantage. Nope, doesn't matter where the match was played. It's the fact that they went 1-1 against each other. Penn State won on their home court. UCLA won on a neutral site. Congrats. It's a push. And then we kind of start going down here. Your non-conference, you know, roughly the same there. UCLA has a few more wins, so you got the edge there. Home record, road record. Penn State, very good road record. 7-0, they have the edge right there. This is the big one, though, Jonathan. These are the two interesting ones. Record against common opponents, 10-1 a pop for both of them, so it's a push. And then the huge number for UCLA that is going to really put them in amazing position to get the number one overall seed. Record against teams under NCAA tournament consideration, 7-2. 7-2. Penn State, 3-2. 7-2, that may be one of the most impressive ones that we have seen in a long time. You even think about, you know, those great Long Beach State teams or, you know, Hawaii teams. The fact that they're going to have more than 10 matches against teams under consideration by the end of the year, potentially could be 9-2, that is uber impressive, just the amount of wins that they're racking up in that quarry. So UCLA has the edge there. And now we go into the Hawaii matchup as well.
So I think the worst case scenario has to happen for UCLA to not take that teams under consideration criteria. The only way that I can see that happening, looking at Penn State's schedule, is if BYU and UC Irvine tank the rest of the season. And I think the other thing that would help, which it would only give them one more win than UCLA, would be if Ohio State won the MEVA, because then Penn State runs the table, they would have two wins against Ohio State versus one for UCLA.
You're correct. Or if Purdue, Fort Wayne, that's right. So that's the other thing to keep in mind. When we're talking about teams under consideration, this could change. So if you are a bubble in consideration team like BYU, like UC Irvine, Jonathan, you bring up this great point. It matters to UCLA that those teams stay in that bubble because it can boost you up. If, let's say, UC Irvine tumbles down, BYU tumbles, well, UCLA is 4-0 against those teams. So we now go from 9-2 really impressive to 5-2. Still very impressive, but not as impressive. So keep that in mind. And looking just down the schedule with UCLA, what they have coming up, they really only have two more matches against teams that are going to be under NCAA tournament consideration. It's against Grand Canyon. So eight conference matches to close out on. UCLA's in fantastic shape. They're in good shape unless they just bottom out beyond belief, which could happen. You never know, but I don't think it will. They are, I would say, of all of the schools right now, UCLA is in the best shape to get an at-large if they were to lose in the NCAA tournament.
The other thing that you can also look at it with the teams under consideration is that UCLA will likely play unless there's just something that just, I don't know, some weird MPSF tournament. They'll play at least one team under consideration if BYU and Grand Canyon still stay in under consideration field, whereas Penn State won't have anybody to play in that criteria in the EIVA tournament.
That is correct. That is a very good point, which, once again, could help, could hurt, you know, because you have to win those matches.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's now talk about Hawaii, the other team that comes in, because if you're a Hawaii fan, hey, that was a huge win against UCLA. Impressive win. Your team's looking great here. You know, you should feel lots of optimism. But what does the data show in the RPI right now? Well, RPI rankings, UCLA number one, Hawaii number five. It's going to take some Hawaii losses for Hawaii to catch UCLA in that category. You look at strength of schedule. Hawaii, number 21 in the nation out of 57 teams. Once again, we're not here to argue, you know, hey, this is how they schedule. Now, keep in mind, got two matches against Long Beach coming up this weekend. Got some matches against UC Irvine. So you're going to see that number grow a little bit, and the gap won't be as much. But are you going to be a top 10 by the end of the season? That may be difficult to get to. I don't see the math leading there where you're going to be top 10. But will you be 21 by the end? Probably not. You'll probably be in the teens, I would imagine. All right. Now, win loss, Hawaii has the edge right there. They only have one loss, 17 wins. Hawaii has the edge in head-to-head. Look at non-conference record. Hawaii 17-1, UCLA 15-2. So kind of a, you know, edge to Hawaii right there, but you kind of look at that as it's almost negated out. Home record, same thing there. Hawaii 12-1, UCLA 8-0. Okay, UCLA has the edge, but not by a whole lot. You just go by pure winning percentage. When we do edges, by the way, I'm just looking at straight up winning percentages here. Record against common opponents, UCLA 14-1, Hawaii 7-1. And now here's the big one, Jonathan. Once again, we start talking about the numbers right here. Record against teams under consideration. Once again, we talked about UCLA being 7-2. Hawaii is 1-1. So if you're Hawaii right now, you have to look at things. You have to say, wonder, is there anything that we need to root for? We're a Hawaii fan that can help boost our resume in teams under consideration. Is there, you know, what needs to happen? So you're looking in the MIBA. You're cheering for Ball State or Purdue Fort Wayne. If you can get, ideally, Ball State, because if Ball State wins the MIVA, they're in under teams under NCAA consideration. Boop, you got two more wins now in that category. You know, that's fantastic. The other thing also, keep an eye out in the NEC. You think about Long Island, St. Francis. You know, they've had tough non-conference schedules, but now they're getting the heart of conference play. Those are two of the better conference or teams in that conference. So this would be the time of year where those two can start racking up wins. So that's going to help your strength of schedule and could continue to help your RPI.
Well, and here's the other thing that you want to really, really be rooting for, and if you're a Hawaii fan, for teams under consideration. And like we said ad nauseum on other podcasts, We have no idea who's going to win the Conference Carolina. So
oh, but you want
open.
Belmont Abbey. You
100%.
Want Belmont Abbey or Bard. You
100%.
Are cheering for them like no other. If you are
oh, yeah.
in if you are in Hawaii, if you're in the 808, you are cheering for the Bulldogs or the Crusaders. One of those teams. It doesn't matter which. One of those teams coming out. Also, MPSF, interesting enough, if Stanford were to somehow make a run, you know, that could help you right there.
Yeah.
You know, or if Pepperdine were to make a run as well. So once again, you know, there's room. And then also keep in mind with Hawaii as well, we kind of talk about, you know, what they need to do. You got two matches against Long Beach. You got two matches against UC Irvine. All those matches are at home. If you take care of business in those matches and nothing else changes, nothing else and teams under consideration, you're staying at 5-1 in that category. So you are in good shape. Are you in as good of shape as UCLA? Are you in as good of shape as Penn State? That's to be decided. But you're in good shape. So I think that that's going to be an interesting piece right here. So, Jonathan, that's the breakdown of the top three teams and kind of how they stack up with each other when you start rolling over all the numbers, all the comparisons.
Oh, wait, you did not compare Penn State to Hawaii.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, well, let me go do this right here. So Penn State, RPI 2, Hawaii 5, strength of schedule, once again, Penn State 4. But I think that number is going to continue to go down a little bit because, you know, once again, they're getting the EIVA play right now and facing some teams with losing records. Hawaii 21. Once again, I don't think Hawaii can catch Penn State in that category, but I think the gap can narrow. Win-loss record, Penn State 17-2, Hawaii 17-1. So edge technically to Hawaii off a percentage, but pretty close. Head-to-head, Penn State goes right there after that big win. Non-conference record, Hawaii 17-1, Penn State are 13-2, so those are looking good. Home record, Hawaii 12-1. Penn State 6-1, so Hawaii edge there. Both teams undefeated on the road. Very impressive to push right there. Interesting, though, the record against common opponent. This is what I found fascinating here is Hawaii 10-0, and Penn State is 7-2. Because keep in mind, Penn State doesn't play Penn State. We don't count alumni matches or any squad scrimmages. So that loss to Penn State doesn't count in that category against record against common opponent. So Penn State undefeated. And then the matchup once again, kind of repeated this. Penn State 3-2 right now and teams under consideration. And Hawaii is sitting here at 1-1. For Penn State, you think about the teams who they have played, the wins that they have. So you have a win against UCLA. Also have a loss against UCLA. So 1-1 in that category. UC Irvine, you got a win there. And then also you have a win against Hawaii that we talked about. And then a loss against Long Beach. So if you're a Nittany Lion fan, we talked about the math that needs to happen, the macronisms that need to go into play here. What you're rooting for, you know, you need UC Irvine to stay on track. You need them to continue to be on that bubble because you have a win there. Maybe you hope Long Beach State just completely bottoms out and tanks in conference play. I don't think any of us think that's going to happen, but you can maybe hope they fall off the bubble. I don't think that's going to happen. You then kind of look, you know, MIVA, you're hoping that, you know, Ohio State can make a run because you got to win against them there. You know, you're maybe looking elsewhere. You know, can you possibly, you know, pick up, can Purdue Fort Wayne get a win? Can Purdue Fort Wayne make a run in the EIVA? It's interesting this year. This is one of the few years where Penn State did not play Lewis or Loyola. Typically, we've seen those matchups before, but did not play each other this year. So in the MIVA, you know, didn't play Lewis Loyola, didn't play Ball State. So it's kind of tough to, you know, you're going to need some type of special upset to go into place here if you can maybe try to get something happen in the MIVA.
The last thing I'll say about Penn State's schedule is the, I don't know if irony is the right word, but they schedule so tough that in some ways it hurts them because what if they added a North Greenville to their schedule? or somebody that it would have a chance to win the Conference Carolinas. That changes the teams under consideration and the strength of schedule criteria.
Absolutely, and this is the math that, that teams do when they start coming up their schedules. It's one of the reasons why, you know, hey, keep in mind, beginning of the year, Penn State scheduled Damon. You know, once again, good home matchup. Damon was willing to travel there. You know, you're above Damon, but Damon, good team right now. Although I think, you know, we're recording this on Wednesday night, struggling a bit against Concordia Irvine. Jonathan, do we got a score update on that?
I will look that up.
As we are filming. This will be my live reaction to the Damon-Concordia match.
They just got swept by Concordia.
That's what, hey, Concordia, good one. So, hey, this is bracketology right here. We'll talk about this. That is great news. If you are a fan of UC Irvine, if you're a fan of Hawaii, if you're a fan of UCLA, all great news right there because Concordia Irvine has one more win. That's giving a slight little bump to your strength of schedule. Penn State, their strength of schedule, took a slight hit tonight because Damon lost. So this is a great example of how every match,
let me hold you off there, Vinny. Did it really hurt them, though? Because Concordia also played Penn State, right?
Oh, good point. Good point. So, yeah, so I, you know what? I completely forgot about that match, Jonathan. I completely forgot. As I sit here and talk about how every match matters. So, no, in that case, it's a net wash.
You know, who actually might hurt would be Long Beach because they don't play them.
That is true. So Long Beach would be that would be a team where that would hurt you right there. So, no, that's a great point. All right. So, John, then we've talked about the three favorites. Do we want to start getting into the at-large bubble teams?
Yes.
All right.
Exciting.
So let's lay this out, this scenario right here. Everything kind of goes natural. None of the three teams we talked about, Hawaii, UCLA, Penn State, none of these teams bottom out. And they have good wrap up the regular season well, then they lose in the conference tournament. The at-large race is between two of those three teams are getting in. And if you're listening to this podcast a month from now on Selection Sunday, and that's happening, you can just skip the rest of the segment. Don't know why you would be doing that, but we appreciate the listening too. All right. So the two teams right now that I'm looking at that have the best chances of getting in the NCAA tournament right now, if the NCAA tournament field were to start today, the two teams that I would give the at-large to, based off all their data, once again, we're looking at the numbers, are going to be Grand Canyon and Long Beach State. Jonathan, should I just say that again really quick? Because I think that we haven't had – I mean, this is – it's felt like the blue blood programs have just dominated the NCAA tournament from the West Coast in recent years.
Whoa.
But Grand Canyon is in prime position to make the NCAA tournament. It'll be the first time in program history.
I think what I love about Grand Canyon is that it's just all of the collective pieces. I think we can make the argument that Christian Jenkins is their best player, but there's no one player on that team you're like, oh, he is the straw that stirs the drink. You know, they're just such a well-rounded team. And then you bring in the addition of Rico Wardlow from Purdue Fort Wayne. He's been a great addition. Jackson Hickman has just upped his game immensely. They're running the two libero system very effectively. Nick Flight is coming to his own he doesn't have Keith Hughes looking over his shoulder. And it seems like with Jenke being a senior, Gianni being his fourth year, it seems like that Matt Worley has been growing, getting to this point for like 3 or 4 years. Like, this is what he's culminated to. It's great to see that payoff, right?
Yeah.
Patience and hard work, and yeah, it's awesome to see. I agree with you.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, you look at, so I'm just going to tell you, because I love also this time of the year for teams that, you know, I'm kind of saying, you're like, okay, if the NCAA tournament were to start today, this would be, you know, one of my two at-large teams. Or, you know, they're not favorites to win the conference tournament, but they're in great shape. And I like to look at their schedules to go down the rest of the way. I'm going down, I'm looking at Grand Canyon's schedule the rest of the way. Grand Canyon is sitting here at 17-1. And Vinny, you're going to sit here and say, no, they're 19-1. Well, a little fun fact here, keep in mind when we talk about bracketology, doesn't matter what you do against Division III NAIA schools. Those matches actually don't count. They count on your records. You know, you put up 40 kills in a game. That's awesome. Yeah, we're going to celebrate that. But in terms of bracketology, it doesn't matter. So that win against Arizona Christian, congrats. Olivet Nazarene, awesome. Great job. Got the win, but those don't count. So you're sitting here at 17-1 in terms of the bracketology. You have 7 matches left. You kind of look at all the numbers. If they go 4-3 the rest of the way, and there's no upsets in the NCAA tournament, or there's no upsets in the conference tournament. And when we mean upsets, I'm talking in the Big West, the MPSF, or the EIBA. Grand Canyon's in. If you and just hear me out. If you take care of business against Princeton, Concordia, which a tough outs right there, and you can split at Stanford, it doesn't, you can get swept by UCLA and you're still going to be in great shape and in. And here's the reason why, Jonathan. And this is why I am so high on Concordia Irvine right now in the bracketology.
Grand Canyon.
Or Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon. Forgive me. Yeah.
Does it have anything to do with the fact they have a bye week between the Stanford matches and the MPSF championship?
No. It has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
And why I'm saying no. Now, okay, so looking through the numbers right here, Grand Canyon, RPI sitting at number 3 right now. So you're number 3, which is pretty good. You know, we're going to say that's, you know, job well done right there at number 3. So we're going to go down here. We're now going to talk about strength of schedule. 16. Nah, okay, that's all right. Nothing bad there. That will probably stay about the same. You kind of look at the schedule that they have left. I think 16 is going to be right about where they will finish. Once again, with some wins. 17 wins, 17-1. Very few schools are going to have a better record than that right now, and you're going to continue to rack things up, get wins. So that's going to be good. You then start looking at some of the other home record, 11-0. Very impressive. Road record, 4-1. But here's the big one, Jonathan. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Record against teams under NCAA tournament consideration, 5-0. So Grand Canyon, 2 wins against UC Irvine. Now you may say, yeah, but you know, one of those went 5 and UC Irvine lost on a slide attack, and it was on the road. Like, that's kind of a nope. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if it was in a 5th game overtime. Doesn't matter if it was a sweep. A win's a win. A loss is a loss. 2 wins against UC Irvine. 2 wins against BYU. And for the projections that we're running, we had Erskine as coming out of the Conference Carolinas. And guess who played Erskine this year?
Grand Canyon.
Yes. It would be really weird if I was just like, you know, who played them? George Mason.
They did.
I can quiz you. So,
but
that is
the
also.
Here's one thing that's even better, though. It could get even better for them. What if Lisa McRae, they're 3rd place right now in Conference Carolinas, and it would not shock me if they won the championship, like, I don't know, a handful of other teams in the Conference Carolinas. if they win this conference, Carolinas, that team under consideration record improves to 6-0.
Yep, you're exactly right. So you see the numbers continuing right. So once again, if you're an Antelope, you're a huge fan of Erskine, you're a huge fan of Louise McRae, go Bobcats, go Fleet. But the other thing also why you talk about the Anteaters and why, or excuse me, the Antelopes, and you talk about why they're in great position, it's also because of that head-to-head against UC Irvine. So you got two wins against UC Irvine. When you are 2-0 against a team, that is a pretty, pretty heavy salvo in your favor when it gets down to head-to-head bracketology when you do the comparison. So it would take a lot of data for a team like UC Irvine to be able to overcome being 0-2 to a team in head-to-head. So once again, if you're Grand Canyon, you still want UC Irvine to win. You want them to continue to rack up wins. But you ultimately know it's going to take a lot, especially because UC Irvine is sitting down there with six losses. If your records are comparable, the head-to-head is such a powerful number, especially 2-0. You are in such an advantage. Same thing with BYU, 2-0 right there, your advantage. BYU is sitting here with six losses as well. So that's why when we talk about the numbers for Grand Canyon, I said they had to go 3-4 in their remaining matches, 4-3 in their remaining matches. That puts you at four losses right there. That's two fewer losses than BYU and UC Irvine. If both those teams run the table and you have the head-to-head advantages against them. And once again, you just need four wins if you're Grand Canyon. Four wins puts you in great position. Honestly, you can go 2-5 potentially, and that puts you at 6. I mean, that's okay, but you really want to be able to take care of business, get down there. And the other thing to keep in mind as well, you may say, well, wait a second, Vinny, shouldn't, like, how you play the final months of the season, shouldn't those matches carry more weight than, you know, beginning of the season? Hey, that's a great question. Women's volleyball, they have record in your last 10. That is not a criteria factor in men's volleyball. It does not matter. A win in the conference quarterfinals counts the same as a win the first week in January. And whether you think that's right or wrong, it's a side conversation. But if you're Grand Canyon, you have done so much to take care of business. You are in prime position right now to get an at-large bid. If you don't win the MPSF tournament, and once again, I'm sure there's Grand Canyon folks listening that's like, hey, Vinny, fantastic. We think we can win the MPSF tournament. Hey, not saying you can't, but if you don't, you're in great position to win it. But if you don't win, better hope UCLA wins. That's the one thing. So, Jonathan, let's now talk kind of Grand Canyon. The other team that I have slated here under consider that would be if tournament were to start today, they'd be in it, would be Long Beach State. So let's kind of do the head-to-head comparison on Long Beach State, kind of see where stuff they rank compared to each other. So if we were to play this out, well, who would be, you know, the higher seed, what have you. So the Grand Canyon is number 3 in the RPI, Long Beach State's number 4. I think Long Beach could rise. Long Beach is kind of interesting because your strength of schedule is going to rise because you're playing Hawaii. But once again, 50% of that RPI is your winning percentage. So if you lose, your winning percentage goes down. So it'll be interesting to see how Long Beach State does. If you lose twice to Hawaii, it's not a dagger, but it just makes it more difficult to catch up. Strength of schedule, Long Beach State has that edge, number 10. Grand Canyon's number 16. I'm going to, looking at that, I think that that's going to be right around where these two teams will finish. But at the end of the season, I think Long Beach State will have a slight edge when it's all said and done. Winning percentage, Long Beach State, 11-2. So not as good as Grand Canyon, but still good. The two teams have not played each other this season, will not play each other unless it's in the conference tournament. So you can't take that head-to-head factor in consideration at all.
They won't play it until the national championship.
Correct. They could meet there, yes.
Right.
Non-conference records, Grand Canyon 11-1, Long Beach 9-2. So, I mean, edge Grand Canyon, but not a whole lot. Home record, Grand Canyon 12-0 right now. Pretty impressive, not going to lie. And then road record, Grand Canyon 4-1, Long Beach 3-1. So edge Grand Canyon, but not by a whole lot. And now here we go, Jonathan. These are the two. Record against teams under – or record against common opponents right now, Grand Canyon 9-0. Long Beach State 3-5. And should add, the reason why some people may wonder, well, how can Long Beach State have such a high number, or how can Grand Canyon have such a high number, Long Beach State such a small number, if they're playing these opponents? Please keep in mind, Grand Canyon met some of these opponents, some Big West opponents earlier in the season. So Long Beach State has yet to play them. So a great example for this would be a team like UC San Diego. So Grand Canyon played UC San Diego earlier in the season, got a win. Long Beach State's yet to play them. So Long Beach State, chance to climb, get to nine or more wins as their schedule's a little more backloaded. Same thing with Grand Canyon coming up here. They're going to have some matches against some teams that Long Beach faced earlier in the season. Teams under consideration, 5-0 Grand Canyon. We talked about that already. Long Beach, 2-2. So, Jonathan, should we talk a little bit about Long Beach now that I kind of gave you the rundown with them and their schedule? What for you, questions do you have with the Long Beach?
Why they're only playing 23 matches into the full slate of 28 that Hawaii is?
That's a great question that, you know, we should ask Alan Knight. But for the bracketology purposes, now here's the interesting thing, though, Jonathan. We talk about bracketology, and this is the simple numbers, because once again, you know, we talk about RPI, we talk about strength of schedule, we talk, you know, about all these different things. You know, remember, keep in mind, RPI is tied to your winning percentage. Well, if you play only 23 matches as opposed to 28, a loss hurts you more than the team that plays 28, because for our proportional share, each match counts more. So that's why for Long Beach, you got to take care of business. Each loss hurts you a little bit more than would a team that plays more matches. Now, conversely to that as well, you could argue, hey, you're right, Vinny, on that point. But you know what? We made sure that we didn't play any teams, you know, weak teams. And I'm just, you know, talking hypothetically right here. You know, we made sure that we didn't schedule any really bad teams with losing records. So our strength of schedule, because we didn't schedule, you know, a really bad team, is going to be really amazing. And we can withstand that. Fair point. Not going to argue that. So looking at Long Beach State right now, Jonathan, I'm kind of going down.
This gets into what our criteria or comparison. Is there anything that within the criteria for records that says that a team or team, if Grand Canyon finished, with one loss at home and Long Beach State finishes with one loss at home, but Grand Canyon, I don't know, has like six more wins, is there anything that in the criteria book, for lack of a better word, that says that the committee cannot reward Grand Canyon that edge in home record because they have more wins, even though they have the same amount of losses?
That's correct. So when we kind of talk about the edges and everything, there is nothing, well, it's, here's the criteria for you to look at. It's not, well, this is solely based off the winning percentage. For our sake, when we're kind of explaining RPI, we do it, but, you know, there could be context. So just like you were talking about, Jonathan, you know, okay, both teams have one home loss, for instance. And let's say Grand Canyon has, you know, 9 home wins, Long Beach State has 10. Technically, Long Beach State would be the favorite in that category, but you could probably look at it as a committee and be like, okay, technically, yeah, they got the edge, but really? All right, let's dig into another criteria piece to see, you know, which of these teams is better. So, no, that's a great question, Jonathan, on that. So, yeah, for our sake, once again, should emphasize, and this is a great point, when we're looking at stuff, when we're doing the edges, we are just saying it's solely based off of winning percentage. We're not taking into that context of you know, hey, is 7-0 truly better than 13-1? You know, because you do get some discrepancies with those. Sorry, as I had a hiccup right there, Jonathan. Sorry about that. So let's talk about Long Beach. So I'm looking at, so this is their remaining schedule, Jonathan. You have all of Big West play, sans UC Santa Barbara, and you play USC. So looking at
this, home and home against USC.
Home and home against USC, yeah. So looking at this, you're going to have potentially four matches that are going to be against teams under consideration. You're going to have the Hawaii matches. Those are going to be under consideration, so big matchups this weekend. And then you're going to have UC San Diego that final week of the regular season, which, I mean, those have the potential to be mammoth, major mover changer matches in terms of bracketology, and we can get into that in a little bit. But looking at this the rest of the way, like, is there anything Long Beach can do to boost their resume to help them out? Well, let's think about the opponents that they've played. Well, hey, King. If King can somehow win the Conference Carolinas, that's going to help you out against teams under NCAA tournament consideration. You played Long Island. Long Island can continue to get wins in the NEC. You know, can you rake up some wins? That would be good.
Our favorite team from Missouri.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about interesting thing with Lincoln Memorial. So here's who they have played and beaten from the MEVA this year: Lindenwood, Loyola, and Ball State. 3-0 against the MEVA. So you want one of those teams to win the MEVA tournament. Now, potentially, you can make an argument that Loyola, and we'll get into this when we get to them, they'll still be under consideration even if they lose the MEVA tournament. So maybe if you're getting really, really lucky, you can hope like Lindenwood or Ball State wins, Loyola loses, but they're under consideration. So now you got two wins there. It's a narrow path. You know, I think that's tough. And then, you know.
Also, though, it was Ball State. That is, it would be a wash because Grand Canyon beat Ball State. So you really are looking. And then Lindenwood actually would probably favor Grand Canyon because Grand Canyon beat them twice, whereas Lindenwood only beat Lindenwood once. So, yeah, I guess
right.
Loyola is the team that you really want to win the MEVA.
Yeah, Loyola. I guess if Quincy were to win, that could help. That would help them as well, because you know then all those teams are knocked out. Interestingly enough, they're going to be big fans of the Highlanders, NJIT. You really want NJIT to pull off the upset this year because you have two wins against them, so that could help you out. But, you know, kind of looking at that, we're not seeing a whole lot of path for them. The good news is, though, you kind of look at their path, is very wide open in front of them. So they're sitting here 11-2, only losses against UCLA. So, you know, good resume, good record here. Even if you lose twice this weekend to Hawaii, you're 11-4. You start looking at the numbers. You look at the fact that the teams below you, you have, you know, UC Irvine has six losses. Okay, well, you know, if you were to lose twice here to Hawaii, you run the table, and then you get to those UC Irvine matches, you still control your own fate. Even if you lose twice this week against Hawaii, you are in fine position. That being said, though, even if you lose twice, you cannot afford any upsets in those matches against USC, UC San Diego, and CSUN. And USC
is pretty good this year.
CSUN's good. And also,
yeah.
I just feel USC's, they have the firepower at the pin where they're good for one game. I just feel at some point somewhere before this is done, USC is going to do something crazy and pull some type of upset that we did not expect coming.
But it could be against Long Beach State. It could be against UCLA, yeah.
Could be. I mean, yeah. So keep that in mind as we go on it now. Once again, we kind of talk about, and the reason why I want to emphasize that matchup with UC Irvine at the end is because you kind of look at, well, who's next if Long Beach were to falter? who's that next team? And that next team is UC Irvine. So if you're UC Irvine, kind of like we were just talking with Grand Canyon, where it's, okay, you have an edge here against, you know, Grand Canyon, where if it, or you have, we're talking about Grand Canyon with UC Irvine, where, look, it's going to be really difficult for UC Irvine to surpass Grand Canyon because they're 2-0 in the head-to-head and all this other criteria they're ahead of. UC Irvine, you have a chance. You have a chance if you can beat Long Beach State at the end of the season. Now, let's talk about, if you're good, do you want any more questions about, Jonathan, any more questions about Long Beach State, or should I jump to UC Irvine?
Well, I guess the it's not really a question, but the way that, or a segue with that is that there's a very good chance if chalk happens that they would be the, it could be the 2-3 matchup. And so what if they, I would love it just from a drama standpoint that if they split the regular season, that if they meet in the semifinals, and I, again, we're getting way ahead of us, ourselves, that could be the tiebreaker for the head-to-head.
Yeah, and we have seen this in, look, you know, I'll give you 2018 as the prime example because it involved UC Irvine and Hawaii. You had that situation. They split in the regular season, met in the Big West semifinals. Hawaii won. And I pretty much had that as a slam dunk that Hawaii had the at-large, the head-to-head. And I still – and that year didn't play out as you thought with UC Irvine getting in, but – I mean, the other year as well, I mean, head-to-head matters. You know, I think about also 2013, UC Irvine, another example. They always seem to be in this situation. UC Irvine, Long Beach State. UC Irvine won 3 regular season matches against Long Beach State. Once again, it was a little bit of a crazier time back in college men's volleyball. You had MPSF teams playing non-conference matches against other MPSF teams. It was a different time in the sport. But 3-0, and then they lost in the conference semifinals was when Long Beach State won. So Long Beach State, though, was 1-3. UC Irvine got the nod. So once again, head-to-head, that very much matters. And we could get that situation. We could very well get that situation. So let's talk about UC Irvine, kind of what stands out for them with their resume and their record and all their stuff. So they are number 6 in the RPI, number 9 in terms of strength of schedule, 12-6 right now. So they have the most losses of teams that we still have on that bubble for under consideration. So for them to stay on, you know, we're looking at about 8-9 losses. If they start getting into the 10 realm, that then starts gets to the point where it's like, should this team still be considered? And then they fall off. That changes the metrics. So, but 9 losses, you're probably still safe being in that bubble. You kind of keep going down here. Non-conference record 10-6. All right, that's pretty decent. You're looking at home record 6-3, road record 4-3. So, not the best right there. And then their record against teams under consideration, and Jonathan, this is kind of the damning number that's going to really hurt UC Irvine right now. 1-6, and that is a tough number. So you think about their matches that they had and how they get to 1-6. Well, two losses against Grand Canyon. 2 losses against UCLA. You had a loss against Penn State. And then also you had a loss against, as I said here, dramatic effect as I'm pulling up their schedule. Remember that final loss? Can I remember off the top of my head? No, I could not. Hold on. Let me go through. 1, 2, 3. This is called doing math live. Oh, and then you split against BYU. So that's where you got your 1 win against BYU. And your 1 loss against BYU. So that's how you get to 1-6. So what can they do to help their resume, maybe get stuff bolstered, move stuff up? I think for them, it's a little – their path for them is really what lies ahead of them. I mean, you can sit here and hope that, you know, man, you know, can we get, you know, maybe USC to pull off an upset? We're going to get one. Can we get Louis or McKendree? Yeah, can Manuel win the Conference Carolina? Yeah, you can get that. But ultimately, what it's going to come down to is Hawaii, Long Beach State. Can you take a mat? Can you run the table and take care of business against Santa Barbara and Seaside? I would say they're favorites in those matches, but as we talked about, Seaside's very good. Hawaii, if you lose two there, you're sitting at 8 losses, and then it comes down to Long Beach State. And those two matches and the regular season against Long Beach State, and then it's, okay, you need to do something special in those two matches. You have to sweep. I would almost say that UC Irvine right now, as I'm looking at the numbers continuing to go down, if Long Beach takes care of business and does everything that they're supposed to do in terms of, you know, you can lose at Hawaii, but you got 4 losses, then you take care of business those other 2 Big West weekends. The only way UC Irvine can jump ahead of Long Beach is a sweep that weekend. So, is it possible for UC Irvine? Absolutely. The path is there for them. You win 2 at Long Beach. Maybe you take 1 against Hawaii. That's kind of your path. And also, you know, once again, if you're UC Irvine, you'd also say, well, we don't need an at-large. We can win the conference tournament. It's at our place. Absolutely yes. True. I mean, I would hope every team is saying, that's a tall order. Now, in fairness, I would hope every team is saying, you know what? We could win the conference tournament. Is could is a magical word. Yeah. Pay money on it, you could. Yeah, you could win the conference tournament. So the path for UC Irvine, it's there. But it's a difficult path. I think it's going to be a tough one, especially when we start talking about, you even start then think about, well, what if Grand Canyon bottoms out? Well, not only did we talk about how Grand Canyon has the head-to-head advantage, but also keep in mind RPI-wise, that RPI in the MPSF, much better than the RPI, conference RPI in the Big West. So you're just going to have, once again, strength of schedule continuing to help out Grand Canyon, where your strength of schedule, if you're UC Irvine, go get hurt this weekend when you go and play UC Santa Barbara. Now, you'll make up for that against Hawaii and Long Beach, but once again, Grand Canyon, a little bit of a better strength of schedule moving on down. All right, so that is Grand Canyon or UC Irvine. The final team, or there's 2 more teams that have paths that we see, and we'll talk about them really quick. Let's talk about BYU. Jonathan, would you be shocked at the beginning of the season if I told you at this point, hey, BYU, there is a path for them to the NCAA tournament?
Surprise is probably more appropriate. I think they were an unknown question mark, you know. We didn't know what to expect. Yeah. If we looked into 2020, did we really expect them to really make that bounce from 2019 to 2020? Not really. They have pleasantly surprised me.
So let's talk about BYU here really quick. What stuff looks like for them. RPI 7, so you're going to have to make up ground there. Strength of schedule 11. So not bad. You know, decent strength of schedule right there. And then your record is 12-6. Good home record, as always, 8-0. You expect that. But your record against teams under consideration is 1-5. So you may be wondering, Bing, why are we still talking about them? Well, keep in mind also, you may not get an at-large bid, but you're under consideration means a lot. If you think about what we talked about with UCLA, with Grand Canyon, they have 2 wins each against BYU. So you want BYU to at least stay on that bubble of consideration to help you out in that category. and looking at their schedule, I will say this. If BYU loses two matches, they're off the bubble the rest of the season. But they have six matches left, Jonathan, all at home. What's one of the most difficult places to win at? The Smith Fieldhouse. I'll answer it for you. Smith Fieldhouse, pretty tough place to win. You've been there before. Yep. Good ice cream. All right.
I have failed in my visits to the Smith Fieldhouse, though. I have yet to eat a tiger tail. I am very disappointed in myself.
We will work on maybe one day, see if we can hook you up with one. All right, so they play – now, no easy wins here, but Pepperdine at the Smith Fieldhouse, USC at the Smith Fieldhouse, Stanford at the Smith Fieldhouse. Not out of the realm of possibility that you can go 5-1 in those matches or 6-0. So we're going to keep them on for now. Once again, if you do that, there is a path, Jonathan. There is a path. For you to pause, if you do that and Grand Canyon does not fall to reason. Once again, Grand Canyon, two wins against BYU. They are so far ahead right now. I do not see in the metrics how BYU is able to pass Grand Canyon for an at-large unless BYU or unless Grand Canyon just plummets. So you have to say, okay, well, is there a chance? How else could they get in then if Grand Canyon is ahead? Well, there is a mathematical chance that if you, even if you don't have any crazy upset in the conference tournament, that the MPSF could be a three-bid conference and BYU could get it. But this is what you would have to happen. You need CSUN to start pulling some upsets against UC Irvine, Long Beach State, and then also UC San Diego. So you basically need the Big West to cannibalize each other, particularly Long Beach, UC Irvine. If those teams get three conference losses or four conference losses, that really does open up the door for this possibility in BYU. It's a narrow door. It's a very, very narrow door, but there is a path, 1 month left in the season. And that is, I think, an impressive thing for BYU. So, Jonathan, one of the teams that we've talked about a lot of the West Coast teams. You want to talk a little bit about Midwest team here? You're good.
I did that pregnant pause, so if you can have a time to cut this off. We're already 80 minutes into this.
Oh, my goodness. You know what? We're going to stick with it, though. We're 80 minutes in. Let's get to 90. What do you say, Jonathan?
So you can cut this part out, though, right?
No. We're going to keep this part in. Are you kidding me?
What?
This is a great part. No, we're keeping it in.
No. The part that we're talking about, 80 minutes.
No. We're going to keep this in. Look, wow. If someone has gotten in this part of the podcast, they know that they've been listening 80 minutes.
This is true.
Okay, so why not keep it in? Hey, you know what? This is what we're going to do. Thank you. If you have listened this long to me talking about bracketology,
yes.
Thank you. And you know how big of a dork I am, that I have loved talking about this. Where I'm pretty sure we've heard Jonathan typing in the background, doing other things, and just nodding, be like, okay, Vinny, cool, awesome. Yes. So once again.
Also, we are going to hear from Brandon the day
that Brandon, I dare you to hear this entire podcast.
Bring it.
Can you just say randomly in 5 minutes something like really negative about the Dodgers, and we'll see if Brandon like listens. We're just gonna drop that in. Once again, we're talking about Brandon Johnson, contributor for Off the Block, who, by the way, absolutely amazing guy. Can't say enough about what Brandon is able to do for Off the Block, just bringing the knowledge, everything that he's able to bring to the game and to us. So let's talk here about really quick.
The Dodgers' only World Series win since 1988. It was because of COVID.
Here we go. So let's now talk about Loyola. There's no takeaway from that.
Yes. They're the team. I probably have said this to a couple people now. They're the team that I think of like what if, like, so there's two what ifs with them in my opinion.
Multiverse.
Great job, that John. What?
Multiverse. Just a Marvel reference. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Go.
Sorry. So great job, like spectacular job by John Hawks. First year coach. I love the two assistants that he hired. His record speaks for himself, but I would say that the thing that it's totally out of his control, but you will see this next year. I have no doubts that he's going to play a more challenging schedule, because this year, non-conference, they really didn't challenge themselves outside of the Long Beach State loss. And, they played admirably in there, but if they played a little bit more of a challenging schedule in the non-conference, their resume is a little different. And then, the other what if is clearly Long Beach State. If they beat Long Beach State, I think we're putting them in the conversation of top five, top 16, maybe?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you kind of look at their numbers right now, where they're at their number 8 in the RPI. Jonathan, you mentioned this, their strength of schedule is 33 in the nation, now 57 teams. Now, can that schedule get a little bit of a boost? Yes, you have some meat left on that schedule that can help out. Shockingly, Charleston's like coming up on Thursday. That's a huge showdown matchup now.
80s night. Woohoo!
I know, 80s night. And hey, this is a great, once again, we talk about RPI scheduling. This is a huge match because Charleston is, I believe, 16-1 right now. You may have to take out some of the D1 wins or wins against Division 3 teams, get their official bracketology record and everything. But once again, that's going to help. Non-conference, you got Princeton, you got George Mason, and then you run through the MIVA gauntlet again. So I'm going to imagine that strength of schedule, just because you're going through the MIVA gauntlet one more time and you have Charleston, and Princeton, George Mason, those won't be too bad. Although both have losing records right now, so that may not help each much in terms of strength of schedule. I would imagine, though, once all said and done, their strength of schedule is going to probably be floating in about the 20s somewhere. So once again, not where you want to be, but you're at 16 wins, good, impressive right there. The challenging number, if you're Charleston or if you're Loyola right now, you look at this, you are 1-0 against teams under NCAA tournament consideration. So once again, Jonathan, we talk about that match against Long Beach. Yeah, that does change narrative. If you have a win right there against a team under consideration, top 5 in the RPI, I think that kind of changes the conversation. I think what gets interesting for Long Beach, or not Long Beach, for Loyola, excuse me, what gets interesting for Loyola, and we kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier when talking about Long Beach, if Loyola has a good rest of the regular season, which by all means, you kind of go down the list and, you look at it, okay, even if you finish with 3 MIVA losses or you lose 3 matches the rest of the way, which I don't honestly think that team is going to do that. I think that maybe they got 2 losses at best, like looking at the schedule, maybe 3. But even at that, you're sitting there with 5 losses on the season. Once again, if they win the conference tournament, it's a moot point because you're a team under NCAA tournament consideration. You won, obviously, you're in the tournament. But if they were to lose in the conference tournament, let's say to a young upstart team from Muncie, Indiana, the capital of volleyball in the Midwest. If they were to lose, are they still among those teams under NCAA tournament consideration? And that gets into a big factor, once again, when we talk about Long Beach State, because if you take them out, well, Long Beach State has one less win to go to. So, once again, we mentioned this when we were talking about Long Beach. If you're Long Beach, you need Loyola to take care of business. I think that they're going to still be in that consideration bubble. at the end because I think that they'll have enough wins, so few losses. But I just can't see the numbers looking at it, Jonathan, where I cannot see a scenario where they jump ahead of a team. And in all honesty, if things stay status quo, kind of playing stuff out, if, you know, Grand Canyon, Long Beach State takes care of business, I actually think the MEVA is going to be the number 16 and will be in the opening round of the opening round. Opening round part one?
That's what I see on the website. It's called opening round round one. That's what it's called.
Opening round round one. Which, by the
but
way,
I
don't, want – oh, I – as we go
I
in,
kind
I
of want to call
congratulate.
It the first match of the opening round. Does
yeah.
that sound better? I don't know. But,
yeah, it does. I guess, though, for college basketball, I should congratulate all 60 teams who got by to the second round for college men's basketball. So congratulations to all 60 teams that were able to get by. Is technically it's the first round that's being played in Dayton.
Do a shameless plug?
For what?
The national championship.
Oh, yeah, sure. For college basketball or men's volleyball? I mean, you can
men's volleyball.
Where is it this year, Jonathan?
It's at George Mason, first match of the opening round. That's what I'll call it. Tim O'Brien, if I am saying that incorrectly, you can correct me. But I'm going to call it the first match of the opening round is on that Sunday, April 30th, and tickets are on sale. And it's from April 30th through May 6th. And yeah, it should be lots of fun.
It's going to be good. Now, Jonathan, you're going to be there. I'm going to be there, right?
Yep.
That is my question if I'm going to be there. Right? So you're going to be there. You know, Jonathan, we got to figure out our Airbnb situation. Got to find a nice little townhouse. So I think the big question for us is going to be whether or not we want to stay closer to campus, pay a little more, maybe have a 20-minute drive into Fairfax, you know, pay a little less. So that's going to be the interesting conversation.
I think one question is how many Costco's am I going to head up?
That is another one. Or will you be able to get in a Nationals game? Lots of questions
to ask.
That would
be fun, yeah.
So wrapping up with the bracketology here, one thing I know is wondered, well, hey, Conference Carolina, I've heard you talk about them. Where do they fall in? Can we get a situation where, you know, maybe it's like, you know, Barden 5 years ago, where they actually had the better criteria, better data, you know, they got a host, they weren't the number seven seed. We can keep this part simple. Look, I've run all the numbers. The Conference Carolina has cannibalized on itself this season. Barring a number seven seed, number eight seed, or number six seed winning a conference tournament, the Conference Carolina is going to be your number seven seed, whoever comes out of that. But once again, the big thing on that is who comes out could benefit your team if you played them in the regular season, or could help you out if they didn't play the team that you don't want, that the team that you're rooting against. So keep that all in mind as you watch all of these matches. Basically, if you play a team earlier this season that's on your conference, you're now cheering for them to do really, really well. All right, Jonathan, we have hit on – it's been a pretty impressive showing here. We have gone about 90 minutes. Really,
I didn't get that.
Really quick series talking to me right now, really quick. anything else that we want to hit on?
No,
big matches this weekend on the island, Hawaii, Long Beach. Should be fun.
I mean, I guess I'll bounce it back at you. Given what happened tonight between Ball State and Ohio State, do you see the second match of the Ball State Ohio State match in Columbus being any different? I think that would might be the only other match that is ranked on rank this weekend.
Yeah, I think it will be. I think these two teams, it's very much an outlier the last 10 years when there's a sweep in this series. I can't imagine there'd be back-to-back sweeps. I just think that these two teams historically have played each other tight. I think that, that Ball State, they figured out some things. I think on the West Coast road trip, made some adjustments. I think they're looking good. You know, once again, though, I think I continue to think about this with Ohio State. You arguably have the best player in the conference in Jacob Pastor. And, I mean, even if the rest of the pieces are not as good as Ball State, I mean, that's a pretty amazing piece. And this isn't a knock on, you know, Janice or, you know, anyone else on Ball State or, you know, Van Buren. But, I mean, just look at the fact. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, Jacob Pastor was invited to play in the VNL lineup. I mean, that's how highly thought of he is. So I think it'll be very interesting to see how Ohio State responds. I think it'll be much closer than it was last night or whenever you're listening. We're recording this on Wednesday night. By the way, U.S., they're up right now against Columbia. Fun.
Nice.
You got that going. I got that going on in the background. So, yeah, I think that'll be a good one.
I'm glad that you brought up Pastor. I got to see him at length on TV playing against BYU. He's amazing. His athleticism. This is something I probably talked ad nauseum about, that the Player of the Year award, whether it's by conference or nationally, it should not be just automatically given to the best player on the best team. I agree with him. He's the best player in the MIVA, but there's a very good chance that they're not going to win the MIVA, and I still hope that if he continues on the pace that he's at, that the coaches would not knock him for being on a team that might not win the MIVA. I look at it the same way that I look at him the same way I look at Jalen Jasper of Pepperdine. Do we think that Pepperdine is a favorite to win the MPSF? No, I don't think so, but he's clearly been the best player in the MPSF. If Pepperdine does not have Jalen Jasper, I don't even want to know where they're going. Oh, we would be without him.
And I will say that's why I think Pepperdine is one of the scarier. I mean, there's three low seeds in the conference tournament that truly, truly will scare me: Lewis, McKendree, and Pepperdine. And Pepperdine, because you got Jalen Jasper, and whenever you got Jalen Jasper, you got a puncher's chance, and it's a one-game scenario or one-match scenario. So, yeah, no, I agree. I think that's going to be good. Another match, Jonathan, as well, I think, this weekend. Loyola, Purdue, Fort Wayne. These two teams play close. Purdue, Fort Wayne went 5 on the road at Loyola a week and a half ago. I thought they had a rather good showing at the Outrigger for, you know, kind of it was tough for them, you know, going on up against the 3 top teams in the country. But I think they learned a lot from that tournament. I'm kind of excited to see how they look coming after that. So I think that'll be a good one. And then what do we think here, Jonathan?
I want to make sure that you're using your journalistic investigative background. Do we know for sure that Rock got back on the plane to Indiana? Because we know he's a fan of the Tropics.
Yo, that's a good question. I haven't texted Rock, so maybe he didn't. I'm going to guess he did. We're not sure.
You like that paycheck?
Yeah, so we will find out. We will find out. So, hey, look, Saturday night, tune in to ESPN Plus to see if Rock is there on the sideline. That's your plug. Final match, Jonathan. Let's go down here really quick. Is this the week? Is this the week it happened? Morehouse. They take on Benedict. Morehouse. Second year as a program. Do they win? We're not even talking about a match. They've yet to win a set. Do they win a set this week? They play Benedict. That's their only match this week. Do they?
No.
Do they get a win?
No.
Or it's on the road? No.
No. The reason I just so quick to say that is that their best chance of winning a set this year was when they played Kentucky State and they did not take care of business. So I'm sorry. I just don't see that happening.
There we go, Benedict. Big win coming up. We're calling it big win coming up on Saturday. All right, Jonathan, we have talked a lot bracketology. Folks listening have heard a lot about bracketology. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. We have crushed stuff out. Any other questions, comments, thoughts, Jonathan? Anything else I didn't hit on that I should hit on?
No, I think we have hit it all on there. And well, if we have not, we will hear from Brandon.
I think that sounds good. So, you know, it should be good. And I think the big thing we have to keep in mind is just, you know, where would the Dodgers be if they didn't leave Brooklyn? And how many more World Series would they have won?
Yeah.
That's
a very good question. Yeah.
Something for Brandon to think about. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us here. Thanks again. Be sure to check out some volleyball. Enjoy the bracketology. By the way, if you got questions on the bracketology, hit us up. You hit us up on Twitter at Vinny Lopes, off the block 11. Love to answer them. So thanks, everyone. Enjoy some volleyball this week.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed And For Off the Block, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. For more volleyball coverage throughout the week, visit the Off the Block website at offtheblockblog.com. You can also find us on all the major social media platforms at Off the Block 11.